Okay, Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning study. Thank you very much for joining us, for taking time on this holy day to be with all of us. I did want to mention and request that all of you keep your keep our friends in the Carolinas and along the East Coast in our prayers. As many of you know, that Hurricane Florence is over land right now, and it seems to be a very slow-moving storm, bringing a lot of rain. We know this. We've seen this before in Louisiana. Dave and I and John, our local group, we've definitely experienced this, and I think a lot of people don't realize how devastating it can be when you get that much rain in a short period of time. So, you know, there's potential for power outages and many, many other things that are associated with storms like this. So keep those who are in the path of the storm in your prayers as they weather the storm, as we say. So just know that we are praying for you on the East Coast, our dear friends out there. Also, just keep Sherry in your prayers. She's not feeling well this morning. She texted me early. I believe she's probably joining us over the internet, but she's not here in person. But as always, she made some lovely food for us to eat anyway, so thank you for that, Sherry. Now, I did want to announce, some of you already know this, I posted it on Facebook, some of you are not into Facebook, but I did let people know that I will be going to Israel. You already knew that I'd be in Israel for a tour. And several of us had planned to be in Israel at Biblical Tamar for a week early prior to the tour, November, first week in November, leading up to the tour that I go on with Jono Vandoor and Tovia Singer, the Tanakh tour, which is the 11th through the 19th. So I'd already planned on being there then. And then I got a phone call from the Coxons who manage Biblical Tamar Park. They had a vacancy. Long story short, I will now be in Israel for 58 days. Ticket is purchased. I'm planning to go. I'll be there, thank heaven, for Sukkot this year, which will be the first time that I've been in Israel for the feast. Many, many interesting connections, meetings, and events are already materializing. I will tell you more about that in the very short future. For now, know that we're working the technology piece so that my goal is that while I'm out, I will be able each Sabbath to do exactly what I do here. In other words, we've got a room that we're going to set up at Biblical Tamar, which I will use as a synagogue in the wilderness, and I'll come to you live from the wilderness with a weekly teaching as I do now here in the States, rather than just, you know, periodic videos here and there of the beauty of the land. We'll do that as well. But I did want to let you know that that's the intent as I prepare to go over there, that we'll set up and we'll come to you live each Sabbath. Now, in the middle of October, Dave and Patty Tyler are coming here to St. Francisville. They'll be here for a few days, and they've got some things planned during that time that they're here, that Dave is going to help them broadcast. So there'll be one weekend that I've asked Dave and Patty to teach from here in St. Francisville. I think a lot of you by that point will be ready to hear anybody speak other than me. So no, we're looking for that because we're looking forward to that. I'll be watching live from the desert. Dave and Patty, many of you, most of you know them. They're ministers and board members at United Israel. So we're looking forward to our guest speakers coming in the middle of October. Okay, so today is a special Sabbath. You might say, well, all Sabbaths are special. And that's true. But this particular Sabbath is a Sabbath that happens to occur between, in Jewish tradition, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, between Yom Teruah, the Day of the Blast, and between Yom HaKippurim, Yom Kippur, it's popularly known as. And this particular Sabbath is known as the Shabbat Shuvah, Sabbath of Return. The reason it is called a Sabbath of return is because traditionally the 10 days that fall between Yom Teruah and Yom Kippur are known as the days of awe, 10 days of awe. You'll recall that Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is the day upon which all of the sins are measured out. In other words, it's a day of judgment, if you will. So it's during these 10 days that traditional Jews around the world begin to make some personal reflections, some self-assessment. It's a time during which people contemplate the sins of the past in order to improve going forward. So they will look at this time as a time of assessment and personal reflection. And so therefore, what occurs in this intermediate period is the Sabbath of return. Shuvah in Hebrew means return. Now, generally, on this Sabbath, I teach a lesson that is associated with that theme. I'm not going to do that this week, but I will touch on a couple of points that I think are very important. I wanted to read to you a couple of the passages that are associated with this particular Torah reading that occur as special readings for Shabbat Shuvah. So I want to start this morning. If you would go with me to the prophet Hosea, and I want to go to chapter 14, Hosea 14. And this is one of the passages which is read on Shabbat Shuvah. In chapter 14 of Hosea, verse 2, it says, O Israel, return. Now in Hebrew, it starts, Shuvah Yisrael, return, O Israel, to Yehovah your God, for you've stumbled in your iniquity. Take with you words and turn to Yehovah. Say to him, forgive all iniquity, receive us graciously, so we will offer the words of our lips instead of calves. Asher shall not save us. We will not ride upon horses, nor shall we any more say to the work of our hands, you are our gods. For in thee the fatherless finds mercy. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for my anger is turned away from him. I will be as the dew to Israel. He shall flower like the lily and cast forth his roots like the Lebanon. His branches shall spread, his beauty shall be like the olive tree, and his fragrance like the Lebanon. They who dwell in his shadow shall return. They shall revive like corn and blossom like the vine. Their fragrance shall be like the wine of Lebanon. Ephraim shall say, what have I to do anymore with idols? I answered him and looked on him. I am like a leafy cypress tree. From me is your fruit found. Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is prudent, let him know them. For the ways of Yehovah are right, and the just do walk in them, but transgressors shall stumble in them. The idea of this, it records the words that we are to bring when we make a return. We are to go to Yehovah directly. It says very clearly here, take with you words and turn to Yehovah, not to another, not to anyone in between you and him. What this particular passage presents is that God is a forgiving God, like a father to a son. One only has to approach God and ask him to forgive. And notice there is no need for sacrifice in this return. Very clearly, the words of your lips associated with the right actions. In other words, this prayer of return, this prayer of repentance says, I no longer will be associated with idolatry. Now, what I'd like you to do now is to go to the book of Micah. Micah, I want to kick things off with this because I do think it's important whenever we're talking about this period leading up to Yom Kippur. So if you go to Micah chapter 7, beginning in verse 18, It says, who is a God like thee who pardons iniquity and forgives the transgression of the remnant of his heritage? He does not maintain his anger forever because he delights in mercy. He will again have compassion on us. He will suppress our iniquities, and you will cast all their sins into the depths of the sea. You will show truth to Yaakov, loyal love to Abraham, as you have sworn to our fathers from the days of old. Again, this is a beautiful picture of what Shuvah looks like. And it also gives us a very good picture of what Jehovah does on his end. Notice he is going to remove the iniquity. In fact, the picture here is quite beautiful. Taking all the sins and casting them into the sea. That's the picture that we have. So there is a beauty associated with biblical repentance, and it's not necessarily the way that it's described in many religions today. While we're in Micah, just go back to chapter 6 real quickly, and we'll touch on this. When we talk about making teshuvah, when we talk about returning to God, we, people on the earth, might have questions. What does that look like? What do I bring with us? And this is one of the most incredible passages in all of ancient literature, certainly one of the best passages on this subject in the Hebrew Bible. In chapter 6 of Micah, beginning in verse 6, it says, with what shall I come before Jehovah and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will Jehovah be pleased with thousands of rams or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He's told you, O man, what is good and what does God ask of you? But to do justice, to love loving kindness, and to walk circumspectly with your God. This is it. Do you need sacrifices? No. Do you need rivers of oil? No. Does one need to die on your behalf? No. What one needs is what Micah has described here. So I want you to think about that, and I want you to think on this particular day about the subject of return as we approach Yom Kippurim. You know, it's interesting because in Zechariah chapter 1, verse 3, in Malachi chapter 3, verse 7, there is a verse that says in each of these, where Jehovah is speaking and he says, return to me and I'll return to you. Return to me, saith the Lord, and I'll return unto you. It says to me, it should say to all of us, that what the Creator is waiting on is us. You know, a lot of people in their religion are waiting on God to do the next move. They're waiting on him to send someone from heaven or whatever the case may be. But it's actually the opposite. Now, this theme will be touched on in the next few weeks. Today I have something different planned, but I want you to begin thinking today about this idea that God is waiting on us. We must return. Shuvah, Shuvah Yisrael. And once we make that return, then it is God who will return. So it's in our court. It's up to us. You know, one other point, it was God's people who departed from following him fully. It was not the other way around. What Scripture indicates is that it was God's people who departed, and it must be God's people who return with all their heart and with all their soul, as Deuteronomy says. Okay, now today I want to talk about the final phase of what we have received as the Torah. In other words, in these last few chapters, there's some very important details that I want to highlight. Today is going to be a little bit different class. You're going to have to pay close attention, and I'm not suggesting that you normally don't, but I want you to pay close attention to what I want to share with you today. And I wrestled with this late last night and thought, you know, it's so natural on this day to teach on Shuvah. Maybe I'll just go with that, and I generally do that, and it's something that's important at this time of year. But as I read through the Torah portion and I studied it this week, I feel that this is very, very bedrock. It's important. It's foundational truth. And I need to begin to lay this out. One of the projects that I've been working on for a long, long time is where I take narrative stories from various passages in the Torah, which are similar, right? They convey either the same story, the same themes, and I put them in columns. So for instance, a story that occurs in the book of Numbers that might also occur in the book of Deuteronomy and provide different details, I've created a table electronically where I put those passages side by side, and I'm able to fill in some details, okay? It works better if I can show you this, but I'm not ready to show you this. So I'm going to share something with you today, and I want to begin by stating something that I hope makes sense in a presentation in this fashion where I'm talking about it. There is a tendency to read the Torah, that is, as it's popularly defined, Genesis through Deuteronomy, in a vertical fashion, okay? In other words, you begin with Genesis 1:1, and you read all the way to chapter 50, verse 26. And that's vertical, you know, it's like you read from top all the way to the bottom of that, and then you go back and you read Exodus 1:1, all the way to the end, you get the flow. What I propose is that if we truly want to understand and grasp the Torah's message, we have to read horizontally. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with reading vertically as I've defined it, but I'm saying that it's very instructive to look for opportunities to look at the story as it is related horizontally. If the book of Exodus talks about an event that's also talked about in Leviticus or Numbers or Deuteronomy or all of the above, look at them that way as well. I'm going to do some of that today. As I stated, it's a little bit different class, but I want to cover this. I think it's very important because what I began to see as I formulated this teaching is that this will likely turn into several weeks as we work through the final chapters of Deuteronomy. All right. In other words, if the reason that I'm stressing this horizontal reading is that it's the content is covered in the natural way that we read the text. You'll get the details. But sometimes context and setting, which is very important, and the little details you might miss if you don't look at them side by side. Hopefully, that makes sense. So what I'm going to do today is we're going to compare one section of the Torah, which describes some certain key events, and we're going to compare that to another section of the Torah, which seems to be talking about at least the same subject matter, and we're going to look at them together and see what details we can draw out. And it becomes very important, as you will see. Same or similar stories, when looked at side by side, often shed important light on any given subject. I'll give you an example. We have the story of what are the so-called spies in the book of Numbers, chapter 13, and we have the same story with different details in chapter 1 of Deuteronomy, verses 22 and following. Now, when you look at those as you normally would read them, in other words, if you read through the book of Numbers and you get to chapter 13 and you kind of file away what happened with the spies and whose idea it was for the spies to go spy out the land, and you get to chapter 14, you work all the way through Numbers. By the time you get to Deuteronomy, do you really recall what you know about the story of the spies? I'm using that as an example. Because in Deuteronomy chapter 1, if we read the story of the spies, there's some interesting details that aren't the same, and I believe I understand why, with those found in the book of Numbers. So, by looking at those two side by side, we can get the full picture and we can understand things more totally. All right? Hopefully that makes sense. Now, often these same or similar stories are viewed as separate events. There are times where we read things and the details don't look exactly the same, so we might come to the conclusion that they're recording separate events. That may or may not be the case, all right? Especially is this the case by those who read as if the Torah is perfectly laid out chronologically. In other words, Genesis 1:1, we could all probably say that's probably the very beginning. Deuteronomy chapter 34:12, where it talks about the death of Moses, we can probably all say that that's the way the Torah story ends. But within those two bookends, between Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, and between there and Deuteronomy chapter 34:12, some of the events are described in more than one place. You'll see what I'm talking about. Okay. Sometimes, by the way, I will add that they are separate events, but still comparing the stories side by side can be quite instructive. Now, that was sort of a disclaimer, an introduction, as I roll into today's Torah portion, which in Hebrew is Vayelech, and it is translated, and he went, and Moses went, and he spoke to the children of Israel. In Hebrew, the root word literally means to walk, and Moses walked, and he talked to the children of Israel. So he speaks to Israel, to the children of Israel, in Deuteronomy chapter 31, and he tells them a couple of things. If you were to begin, and we're not going to read the whole Torah portion, but I'll just tell you in chapter 31, verses 1 and 2, Moses is relating that he is 120 years old at this point. He says, I'm 120 years old. I can no longer go out and come in before you. He relates to the people that Jehovah has told him he will not cross into the land. We get very little about the details of that in the book of Deuteronomy at this point, in Deuteronomy 31. But nonetheless, he tells them that, and he also informs them in the next several passages that Joshua will lead them into the land. He publicly endorses Joshua and announces him who's the one who will lead them to their legacy. Now, I want to pick up in Deuteronomy chapter 31. I want to pick up in Deuteronomy 31. And I want to go to verse 14 to lay the groundwork for what I want to present today. Deuteronomy 31, verse 14. And Jehovah said to Moses, behold, your days approach, you must die. Call Joshua, present yourselves in the tent of meeting, that I may give him charge. All right? So he tells him, your days are coming to a close. You have to die. All right? Now, I'm going to show you as we work through this, the significance of this to the point that I'm making in my introduction. But he tells Moses, bring Joshua, and you two basically come to the tent of meeting, and I will give Joshua charge. Everybody follow me so far? But he doesn't. Moses does bring Joshua. They go to the tent of meeting, but he doesn't speak at this place in the Torah to charge Joshua. Rather, at this point, and I'm not going to read what follows. I know some of you are probably trying to jump ahead. I'm going to come back to this. But what follows in verse 16 through 21, I'm going to propose are the final words of Jehovah to Moses in the text of the Torah. And you might be thinking, wait a minute now. We're only in Deuteronomy chapter 31, we've got chapter 32, we've got chapter 33, and we've got chapter 34, Ross. This can't be the place where the last words from God to Moses are placed. All right? Stick with me. You're going to like this. We're going to cover this later. Now, within the final words in this particular passage, within the final words, there is mention of a poem or a song, Shira. It's a song, basically. There is mention of a song in verse 19. Listen, now, therefore, write this song for yourselves and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this poem or this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. So he makes reference to a song that Moses is to teach the children of Israel, but he doesn't give the song. Not here. Now, this is all very important, as you'll see. Now, go down with me to verse 22, and it says, Moses therefore wrote this song the same day and taught it to the children of Israel. Right? But we don't have the song in 31. We have the last recorded words of Moses, which I propose contained the song. Moses did write down the song. We just read that he wrote down the song. Moses did teach the children of Israel the song. We just read that he did that. But we don't have the song. Okay, now, we won't get the words of the song until later in the narrative. Look down chapter 31, verse 30. And Moses spoke in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. Remember in verse 22, it already said that he did this. You see, I'm trying to show you something about the chronological flow of the text. Now, what song are we talking about? Here it is. Chapter 32, verse 1, give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. You see what I'm saying? The song, which is referenced in 31, doesn't occur until chapter 32. So we're going to cover the words of the song and more fully cover the last message of Jehovah to Moses in next week's class. But in order to do that, I've got to lay some groundwork this week. So technically and specifically, over the next couple of weeks, what I want to do is present this final interchange between Jehovah and Moses. I want to cover this in great detail, and you will be surprised at where we need to go to assemble the information that we need in order to fully grasp the Torah story as it concerns this matter. Now, I want to tell you that the way that we're going to do this is by studying scriptures, listen to me, from the words, on the basis of the words, and in connection with the words. In other words, it's about the words. We've got to look at the words. We've got to compare similar stories and similar narratives from various places and bring them together in order to get the fullness of what happened in this last interchange. So, what follows, if you will tolerate me, is my understanding of this final conversation, this final interchange between Jehovah and Moses, and it's going to lead into next week's class. So over the next few weeks, my intention is that I will cover Moses's last day. Moses's last day. A lot happens on that last day. Have you ever had a really busy day? You get a lot done? Moses' last day is very busy, as you'll see. It's going to take us to several passages in the Torah, several Torah portions. It's going to cross books of the Torah. Everybody ready? All right. So we just made note of the fact that Jehovah gave Moses a song in this week's Torah portion, that he was to teach the children of Israel. We read in verse 22 of chapter 31 that he did just that. And then as I just showed, as I've just shown, beginning in 31, 30 and into 32 is the content of the song. Now I want you to go with me to chapter 32 of Deuteronomy. And I want you to look at verse 44. Ready? 32:44. And Moses came and spoke all the words of this song in the ears of the people, he and Hoshea, the son of Nun. Now, why is he called Hoshea there? Interesting, right? Remember, his name is changed to Yehoshua. All right. Verse 45, and Moses made an end of speaking all these words to all Israel, and he said to them, set your hearts on all the words which I testify you among this day, which you shall command your children to observe to do, all the words of this Torah. For it's not a vain thing for you, because it is your life. And through this word you shall prolong your days into the land into which you go over the Jordan to possess it. Now, there's something I wanted to point out. I'm going to be throwing some details at you. You may have to write these down, think about them, meditate on them, and really carefully study this out. I want you to look at something. In verse 44, I want you to notice that this is in the third person. Right? Traditionally, it is taught that the Torah, which is defined as Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 12, is all the handiwork or all the work of Moses Rabbeinu. This is what people have said. This is a Torah that God gave to Moses, that Moses gave to us. And most people believe that Moses wrote from Genesis 1:1 all the way to the end. Now, there are some difficulties with that view because, as you'll see, what follows very shortly is the death and burial of Moses. So a lot of people will look at that and they'll say, well, Joshua wrote that. Well, there's no indication in the text that Joshua wrote that. The question becomes, all of this is to make a point. What I want to do is talk about a phrase that occurs in what I just read. This passage is in the third person. There is reference to what is called in the text, HaTorah HaZot, this Torah, this Torah. Now, you'll be surprised. Do a search on this. If you have the capability and the ability and the tools to search this out, look for the occurrences of the phrase, this Torah, and just take a note of where they occur and only where they occur. But this is all going to be in a further class. Stick with me on this. Now, I want you to look with me to verse 48. Same chapter, chapter 32, verse 48. And Jehovah spoke to Moses that same day. What is that same day? We're going to talk about that day. This is the long day. Jehovah spoke to Moses that same day, saying, go up into this Mount Avarim to Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, that's facing Jericho, and behold the land of Canaan, which I give to the children of Israel for a possession, and die in the mount into which you go up and be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother died in Mount Hor, and he was gathered to his people, because you transgressed against me among the children of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, because you sanctified me not in the midst of the children of Israel. Yet you shall see the land before you, but you shall not go there into the land which I give to the children of Israel. Now, again, I know this is technical, but I want you to pay close attention. This is written in the third person. And Jehovah spoke unto Moses. You see that? Now, it's not natural, it wouldn't seem natural that if Moses wrote this particular passage, don't throw stones yet, stick with me. If Moses wrote this passage, it would seem more natural for him to say, and Jehovah spoke unto me that same day, saying. You see that? Now, some would say, no, it's just a style that's reflected in the Hebrew Bible, which it is. But I'm going to show you something if you stay with me today. Because what follows this account that I just read to you from Deuteronomy 32, verses 48 through 52, is an account of the blessing of Moses, which is followed by the account of Moses' death and burial. I want you to go back with me to make this point. Go with me to the first chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. The first chapter of Deuteronomy. And actually, we're going to begin in chapter 2. I just want to show you something that I've noticed over the past several years in my studies. In Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 2. And Jehovah spoke to me, saying, you see that? Is that the third person or is that the first person? You know this from school? Remember, this is the first person. This is as if it's like a autobiographical. It's like a journey log. Moses is speaking, and it says, and Jehovah spoke to me, saying, you have compassed this mountain long enough. Turn north and command the people, saying, you are to pass through the border of your brethren, and so forth and so on. You see that? Now look down at verse 8. And when we passed by from our brethren, the children of Esau, who dwelt in Seir, through the way of the Arabah, from Eilat and from Ezion Geber, we turned and passed by the way of the wilderness of Moab, and Jehovah said to me. You see? You get that? It's a little bit different. I want you to notice these details as we put this class together and lay the foundation for the next couple of weeks. Now look down at verse 31, chapter 2, verse 31. And Jehovah said unto me, behold, I have begun to give Sihon and his land before you begin to possess, that you may enter his land. You see the difference. See, I just want to go through a few of these. Now look down at chapter 3, verses 1 and following. Then we turned and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And Jehovah said to me, fear him not. Do you get the feel when you read these early chapters that what we get is a very personal, like a log, written in the first person by the hand of Moses? It reads differently. Now, some are going to be drastically coming to different conclusions than I am. I presented this when I started with this is my opinion if you'll tolerate me. Because it's something that I'm beginning to notice, and it's helping me to make some sense of some things. It's not that I've solved all the problems, but it's very important as we look at the text of especially what I want to build up to, HaTorah HaZot, this Torah. This Torah. What is this Torah? Remember in Malachi chapter 4, where it talks about, remember the Torah of Moses, which Jehovah commanded him at Horeb, the statutes and judgments. Well, that's pretty important. It's important to remember the Torah of Moses. What is the Torah of Moses? Is it what we've defined it as, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, or does that which is popularly referred to as the Torah contain within it the Torah of Moses? All right, now look down at verse 18 of chapter 3. And I commanded you at that time, saying, Jehovah your God has given you this land to possess it. Pass over, armed before your brethren, the children of Israel, all that are fit for the war. So again, first person. Now go with me down to verse 23, because this is the point that I wanted to get to about the last day of Moses, the death of Moses, and I want to highlight some similar stories which talk about similar themes and thereby put together from within the text of the Torah as we've received it, the final interchange between God and Moses, which I think is very, very instructive, but it has to be assembled from within the story. Call it the story within the story, okay? So in chapter 3 of Deuteronomy, verse 23, it says, first person, and I implored, or I besought Jehovah at that time, saying, O Adonai Jehovah, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand, for what God is there in heaven or in earth that can do according to your works and according to your might? I pray thee, let me go over and see the good land that is beyond the Jordan, the goodly mountain region and the Lebanon. But Jehovah was angry with me for your sakes. Now, wait a minute. Remember, the story, as I remember it, in another place, is that God tells him he's not going to cross over. Why? Because Moses did not do honor to Jehovah. But notice what it says here. Jehovah was angry with me because of you, basically. Okay, just put this in your notes. And would not hear me, and Jehovah said to me, let it suffice thee, speak no more to me of this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah, lift up your eyes westward and northward and southward and eastward, and behold with your eyes, for you will not go over this Jordan, but charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which you shall see. So we abode in the valley over against Beit Peor. This is an account of a conversation between Jehovah and Moses, where Moses relates that God's not going to let him in. Here, he says, because of the people. He goes to God. He's requesting that he be allowed in. And Jehovah tells him, Rav Lecha, much is to you. Don't come at me with that anymore. You're not going over. Tells him very plainly. He tells him in this particular passage, like the other passages we are looking at today, we get certain things, whether or not these are considered the exact same interchange or not, they are instructive because they are around the same topic. Here are the themes that I'm focusing on in this present study to get at this final interchange between God and Moses. Very important. We'll get the last words of Moses to God, the last words of God to Moses. All right, but we have to assemble things. So here we go. Here's what we learn. In all of these stories, if you line them up in columns, and I've done this, that speak of this conversation, you learn the following. Moses is told, you're not going to cross over. You're not going in the land. And then you write down why that is. This is horizontally we're looking at this. Another thing that's talked about, a theme that recurs, is that Joshua, not you, Moses, Joshua will lead the children of Israel in. And there is a charge to be placed on Joshua that will empower him to take over. And the third point is that Moses is to ascend the mountain and die. He's told this. Now, once again, I want to go back and I want you to look at Deuteronomy 32, verses 48 through 52. Now, I told you when I started, you got to pay close attention. So stick with me on this. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 48. Third person. I feel like saying, who's on first, who's on third? And Jehovah spoke to Moses that same day, saying, this is referring to a day when this conversation happened. But is it the actual conversation, or is it a record of the conversation that's recorded elsewhere? Shake your head yes. Yes, Ross, that's what it is. Go up into this mountain Avarim to Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab that is facing Jericho. Behold the land of Canaan, which I give to the children of Israel for a possession, and die in the mount into which you go up, and be gathered to your people as Aaron your brother died in Mount Hor and was gathered to his people, because you transgressed against me among the children of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin, because you sanctified me not in the midst of the children of Israel, yet you shall see the land before you, but you will not go there into the land which I give to the children of Israel. If you choose, place your hand here, because you're going to go back and forth, not with me. I'm going to take you there once. Go with me to the book of Bamidbar, to the book of Numbers. I want you to go to the book of Numbers. In chapter 27, Numbers, chapter 27. And I want you to look at verse 12 with me. And Jehovah said to Moses, go up into this Mount Avarim and see the land which I have given to the children of Israel. And when you have seen it, you also shall be gathered to your people as Aaron your brother was gathered. For you rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the waters before their eyes. That is, the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. Now, does that sound similar to what we read all the way over in Deuteronomy chapter 32? Yes. Some might say that this interchange happened multiple times. Okay? And you might even find evidence for that when Moses appeals to God in chapter 3 of Deuteronomy, and God tells Moses, Rav Lecha, enough is to you, or much is to you. Some translate that, don't say this anymore. But I encourage you to study that. But the idea is that this conversation occurs, that he's told he's not going in. Now, according to this particular account, Moses speaks his last recorded words to Jehovah. Here, in Numbers 27, behold, I show you a mystery. Watch, listen. Numbers 27, I'm going to read beginning in verse 15. Now remember, he's just told you're not going into the land. You're not going out. You're going to go up this mountain, Mount Avarim at Mount Nebo, in the plains of Moab, and you're going to die there. Just like Aaron was gathered to his fathers, you're going to be gathered to your fathers. Now watch what Moses says to Jehovah. And Moses spoke to Jehovah, saying, "Let Jehovah, the God of the spirits of all flesh." I love this phrase. It's only used twice here and in Numbers chapter 16. Moses refers to God as the God of the spirits of all flesh. "Set a man over the congregation who may go out before them and who may go in before them, who may lead them out and may bring them in, that the congregation of Jehovah be not as sheep that have no shepherd." Right? You know that phrase, sheep without shepherd. Imagine, if you will, sheep scattered on a mountainside because there's a lack of a shepherd. Moses is told, you won't go into the land. And Moses tells God, okay, if that be the case, his final words to Jehovah, and I'll prove that, are this: we'll put someone over this people that can bring them out, bring them in, that can lead them in and take care of them. His concern is for the people to the very end. Now watch. Verse 18 and following, Jehovah grants that request. This is where we learn that it is Joshua who is to be the one who will follow through and bring the children of Israel to their legacy. Verse 18, "And Jehovah said unto Moses," third person, "Take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is spirit, and lay thy hand upon him, set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. You shall put some of your honor upon him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall ask counsel for him after the judgment of the Urim before Jehovah, that his word shall they go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he, all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation." And Moses did as Jehovah commanded him. He took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest, before all the congregation. He laid his hand upon him, gave him charge as Jehovah commanded by the hand of Moses. Now, let me go to my handy bookshelf, and I want to read a comment from Friedman, which I think is quite instructive. In this particular passage, his comment on Numbers 27:15. Numbers 27:15, it says, "And Moses spoke to Jehovah, saying, Let Jehovah, the God of the spirits of all flesh." Here's his note. This is the last time that Moses is quoted as saying anything to God. Please hear me. Please hear me. We are in Numbers 27. In Deuteronomy, says Friedman, Moses will report to the people his past conversations with God, but these are the last words of Moses to God in the Torah, and his last concern is the people, that they should have a leader. Now, why is this important? Am I straining at a gnat to swallow a camel? Am I making a mountain out of a molehill? No. The last thing Moses says to God is, don't leave our people, this is my paraphrase, my living Bible paraphrase, without a shepherd. Now, in Numbers 28, the subject changes drastically. You know what it covers? "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, my offering, the provision of my sacrifices made by fire for a sweet savor to me." Chapter 27 deals with sacrifices. Read it. Chapter 28, 29, 30. Go through. You get to chapter 33, and it's a record of the travels of the children of Israel. But it seems almost in the narrative flow, if you read it, and you read it as a chronological point, you'll see the narrative unfold and you think, okay, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. Question becomes, at what point do these things fit? In Numbers 27, it says, go up into this mountain and die. You're going to appoint Joshua to be your follower, so forth, the one who follows you. Interesting. Okay. Now, you know what happens. So let me look back in Numbers chapter 27, what we just read about this interchange between God and Moses. Prior to this, if you read the story which leads us up to Numbers 27:11, it's about the daughters of Zelophehad. It's a story about the daughters of Zelophehad who said, look, what do we do about an inheritance? You know, we're daughters and we're not sons, and we're talking about the division of land and all that. And this judgment is given in Numbers 27 up to verse 11. Then there's a white space. And then this account of Moses and Jehovah talking about, you're not going into the land. Right? I'm telling people, you got to pay attention to the white spaces. It's very, very important. So my question to you at this point is, are we looking at a chronologically flowing narrative that brings us from sequence to sequence according to date? And I say no. If these are the final recorded words of Moses to Jehovah, don't leave the people without a shepherd. This is a final, if these are the final words, as I propose, based on not only what Friedman said, because I went and checked. I wanted to read from that point on and see, is there anything else Moses says to God? Or is that the final word? And if that is the final word from Moses to God, and he no longer after this in the Torah speaks directly to Jehovah, what then are the final words of Jehovah to Moses? Can we discern this from the text? Can we find the clues which will let us know what they talked about on that day? And if we can do that, what message can we take from it? Now this, as I said, it's going to take a couple of weeks to fully lay this out, but we're going to get pretty good ways into this. Okay, by comparing these accounts with similar themes and similar words and similar phrases, I think we can find what God says to Moses as the last discussion that he has with him that we know of. In other words, the last recorded words of God to Moses. Go with me to Deuteronomy 31, please. Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 14. Look, I don't believe that I'm talking to novices, to people who aren't skilled. I believe I'm talking to teachers. I'm talking to people who are very fluid in their scriptural studies and fluent in their understanding. This is not for babies, if you will. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 31, beginning in verse 14, please. 31:14. And Jehovah said unto Moses, behold, your days approach to die. Call Joshua, present yourself in the tent of meeting, that I may give him charge. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tent of meeting. Now remember, what you would think would follow is Moses. And this is, please listen as I explain this. You would think, based on what we just read, you and Joshua, God says, Moses, you and Joshua, come to the tent, and I'm going to charge Joshua. You would think that Moses would say, okay, Lord, we're here. Here's Joshua. And then the Lord would say, Joshua, but watch what happens. Verse 15, They're both there, by the way. And Jehovah appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the door of the tent. And Jehovah said to Moses, "Behold, you will sleep with your fathers, and this people will rise up and go astray after the gods of the strangers of the land into which they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I've made with them. Then my anger will burn against them on that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they shall say on that day, 'Are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us?' And I will surely hide my face on that day for all the evils which they shall have perpetrated in that they have turned to other gods. Now, therefore, write this song for yourselves and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this poem may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land of which I swore to their fathers, one flowing with milk and honey, they shall have eaten and filled themselves and grown fat. Then will they turn to other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. And it will come to pass when many evils and troubles have befallen them that this poem or this song shall testify against them as a witness, for it will not be forgotten out of the mouth of their seed. For I know their inclination and what they do even now before I have brought them into the land of which I swore." Look. That's it. He tells Moses, "These people, you're going to die. These people will forsake me. I know their inclination." Do you realize that this is the first time that the word inclination in the Hebrew is used since all the way back in Genesis chapter 6 and in Genesis chapter 8? "I know the inclination of their heart." God knows that the people once again have failed to live up to his standard. Starts in the garden. What do? He gives them one command. They add to the words of that command. And you might say, well, I'm just being careful. I've built a wall around the instruction. That way I surely don't break it. And it leads to the mess up. It leads them to sin. And then ultimately they reach such a state of depravity that God says, enough. It grieved him at his heart that he had made man. There's one person, Noah, who's righteous in his generation. Upright. He saves Noah. He starts over. But you know how the story goes. So here, towards the end, the last thing God tells Moses, according to the way I read the text, is this. Now, part of that, he mentions the song here, so the song is part of that too, because he says, write this song. We don't get the song until next week. We're going to look at that song. We're going to expand on and expound on the final message of Jehovah to Moses. From this point on, the Torah's story is complete. I'm gonna prove it to you. Deuteronomy 31. Listen, verse 22. Moses therefore wrote this song the same day. Here we are on that day again. And he taught it to the children of Israel. And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, "Be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land of which I swore to them, and I will be with you." Now, is this Moses saying he'll be with him? Right? Moses is going to be dead. That's for another class, though. Verse 24, "And it came to pass, when Moses had made an end of writing the words of this Torah in a book, until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites who bore the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah, saying, 'Take this book of the Torah, HaTorah HaZot, and put it in the side of the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah your God, that it may be there for a witness against you.'" And then he gets into what I just read. Did you hear what I just read? Moses is writing, just like I am. He's right. Well, he'd be doing right to left, you would think, okay? All right. And as he's writing, it says, "And it came to pass, when Moses made an end of writing the words of HaTorah HaZot, this Torah in a sefer, until they were finished." So it's finished. And he takes it and he rolls it up. Now, please look. He's got it rolled up. We still have three chapters left. But he's finished with HaTorah HaZot. The sefer Moses is finished. And he gives it to the Levites. I need some Levites. They're over here. He brings it to them and he says, "Take this, Levites, and put it in the side, Batsad Aron, in the side of the ark. It's going to be for a witness. Keep it here." And then the story continues. Do you get this? Now, what follows this? What follows the end of the Torah? The song of Moses, or the song that God teaches Moses to teach the children of Israel, which we already read about in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 19 and verse 22, that God told Moses, that Moses taught the children of Israel, that he wrote down, that he conveyed to them. So then we work through 32. It's that song which goes, put it back in chapter 31, please. That is then followed by the blessing of Moses, which could go anywhere. And that leads us to this. Go with me to chapter 34 of Deuteronomy. Please pay attention. Chapter 34, verse 1. "And Moses went up from the plains of Moab to the mountain of Nebo, to the top of Pisgah facing Jericho." Third person. Someone other than Moses wrote this. "And Jehovah showed him all the land of Gilead, to Dan and all Naphtali, and all the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, in all the land of Judah, as far as the utmost sea, in the Negev, in the plain, the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. And Jehovah said to him, 'This is the land which I swore to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov, saying, I will give it to your seed. I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there.' And so Moses, the servant of Jehovah, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of Jehovah, and he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab over against Beit Peor, but no man knows his grave to this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated." Who wrote that? My point is there are many speculations as to who wrote that and who wrote other things. I am a fundamentalist Bible believing. I carry this big Bible to the grocery store with me. I love Jehovah. I love the Bible. It is my passion. But I want to look at this with fresh eyes, and I want to pray about it, and I want to know what exactly. When Malachi says to remember the Torah of Moses, my servant, what is he talking about? Did he have in mind Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy chapter 34:12, or something else? Is the Torah of Moses, the Sefer Moshe, the Torah, HaTorah, HaZot, is it contained within this? Absolutely, I believe that. Next couple of weeks, what I want to do is I want to explore this deeper. Because there are a lot of people who jump to conclusions. Like in the book of Joshua, for instance, Joshua does write something, right? What is it that Joshua writes, and is that HaTorah HaZot? Is it this Torah? And does that mean in the early chapter 1 of Joshua, is that then defining, does that then prove that he wrote about the death of Moses? These are some interesting questions. Now, I hope that this isn't intended to shake anyone's faith. This is not intended to do that. This is intended to inform your faith. This is intended to answer questions and to ask questions that others fear to ask. Let me tell you something about my journey real quickly. I'm not scared anymore. I'm not scared to ask. In fact, I'm scared not to ask. So as I begin to lay out these ideas, understand that I am zoned in and I want to know, I want to be able to discern what specifically is that Torah of Moses that we're talking about. HaTorah HaZot. Look it up. Do your study. But becoming over the next couple of weeks, we're going to take a closer look. I'm going to zoom in. I'm going to fill in some gaps. We're going to talk about the song. We're going to talk about the blessing. Next week, I want to take a closer look at Jehovah's final words to Moses. This includes, but isn't limited to, the song mentioned in chapter 31, words that are recorded in chapter 32. But I want to leave you with this. Why is it important to understand what is the Torah of Moses and what it contained? What did he write down, give to the Levites to put in the side of the ark? Why is that important? I'll tell you what it is. If it's discovered within the book, it will lead to a revival that the likes of which the world has never seen. I'm going to show you an example in the next couple of weeks of a glimpse of that from the scriptures, from the Hebrew Bible. But I'm going to show you why I believe that, and it's in this Torah portion in Deuteronomy 31, and I'm going to close with this, but go to Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 10. Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, in the time of the year of release, in the Feast of Booths, when all Israel has come to appear before Jehovah your God, in the place which he shall choose, you shall read HaTorah Hazot, this Torah, before all Israel in their hearing. Gather the people together, men, women, children, your stranger that is within your gates, that they may hear. Notice what happens when they hear it. That they may learn and fear Jehovah your God and guard to do all the words of HaTorah Hazot, this Torah, and that their children who've not known anything may hear and learn to fear Jehovah your God as long as you live in the land which you go over the Jordan to possess it. I'll leave you with a question more than I'll leave you with an answer. Which means if you choose, you have to join us again. Because the question is, he says, read this Torah in the hearing of the people. And look, I've participated, and we have an incredible team of loyal, faithful people, and I applaud what they do every year. They read the entire Torah from Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12 in Hebrew online, and you, my friends, can be part of that. You can sign up, you can join the Hebrew Torah reading team, and you can learn with them to read Hebrew, and you can also participate in this round-the-clock reading. I think it takes like 38 hours to read the whole thing. There are some who believe that that's what Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 10 and 11 are talking about. I'm going to propose something slightly different. I'm going to encourage you to join the Hebrew Torah reading team and do that anyway. But I think that there's a message here that has the ability to change the world. It's going to cause people who don't even know to learn to fear Jehovah. That's what we need in this world today. So as we approach Yom HaKippurim, during these days of awe, I want you to think about the return. I want you to think about returning to the one God and to his ways with all your heart, with all your soul, knowing that if you do, God will cast sins into the sea. We serve a God who is, among other things, merciful and gracious and long-suffering. A forgiving God. And I encourage you to continue to pray for those who are in the path of the storm. Pray for those among us that are sick. And above all, let us return to Jehovah our God. Shabbat Shalom.